When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Voice Hacks Podcast. I'm your host, Mary Z. On the Voice Hacks Podcast, I'll be talking to some of rock and metal's best singers, coaches, and experts about what goes into the mysterious and amazing sounds we make with our voices. If you like this podcast, please help spread the word by sharing it with your friends. Post our episodes on your Facebook and Instagram and tag me and my guests. I'm at Metal Mary Z on Instagram. Don't forget to leave the show a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, follow me on YouTube at Voice Hacks by Mary Z. Let's get into it. Before we dive into this week's episode, I wanted to let all of you podcast listeners in on my upcoming vocal program, of which you can be the first to get on the wait list for right now when you visit voicehacks.co. Voicehacks.co. Put your information in there, get on the wait list, see what my new program's going to be all about. Hey, everybody, I'm stoked to be back with this week's episode of the Voice Hacks Podcast. I have an awesome vocalist that I really admire on the show today, Charlotte Wessels. Welcome. It's so great to have you.
Thanks for the invite. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think we might have met once before back in the day. I think I did this Eve Zappel show thing back in Belgium. Like, it was like a decade ago, though. So
yeah, we did. That was 2012.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I think this is like a really long time ago, 2012 or 2013 or something.
Oh, damn. I didn't realize it was like 10 years ago. Okay. Yeah, it might be 10 years ago.
Yeah. And there was a lot of us there. So it's a lot to remember, but it was cool.
Yeah, I remember. It was a lot of fun. I remember a little photo shoot afterwards and just the girl hangs. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was neat. It was a special experience. But I wanted to start off talking about you, obviously, and talking about the one thing that I'm really curious about is your Patreon, because you started a Patreon. A lot of the vocalists that I've had on have, you know, taken their career totally into their own hands, created Patreons, creating these communities around their art. And I just really wanted to hear a little bit more about when you started that and how that community is influencing your current work.
I thought about it for a very long time. I was initially inspired by Amanda Palmer. Like, I read her book, The Art of Asking. I've been a fan of hers since like the very early days when we were at Roadrunner and I got like the Dresden Doll CD.
Yes.
And I loved it. So I've been following her career and I saw her move to Patreon. And the thing that I really love the fact that it was also like a community building tool, not just like, I'll just slap my music on here and see if anyone likes it. It was really like, she would be really open about the things going on in her life. And it just really appealed to me. And I thought I would like to do something like this, combined with the fact that I wrote quite some music that didn't necessarily fit what we were doing with Delaying back then. Like, I would write songs that, you know, either were too pop or too weird or whatever. And I never minded it too much. Like, it's always like you write some songs, some end up on an album and some don't. But at one point, like, there was quite a bit that was not ending up on an album that I didn't write with the intention of ending up on that album. And it was like, it's kind of a shame that these are just, you know, sitting on a hard drive here and no one's listening to them. So when I started thinking about the Patreon, it was just to have a place to have a home to those songs. I chose Patreon because it was something that I could do on my own terms, you know, without a middleman. But also, I had done like side projects before, which I really liked. It's fun to collaborate with other people. But when I was doing projects with other people, I felt like that's an extra commitment. And I often felt that I was holding them back because, you know, I had so much ambition with Delaying and we were touring so much. And It was basically hard for me to commit to something else. Yeah, and not feel like I was holding them back. Yeah, I was like, if I want to do something, I want to do something that I can do on my own terms. And Patreon, yeah, mainly because of that community feel that it had to, it was something that really appealed to me. So I've been making plans for a very long time, and I launched it in May of 2020. Yeah.
Wow. So it's already been a couple of years. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that a lot of people, they, because that's something else where I think that Patreon has been a lifesaver for many people during the pandemic, because, you know, couldn't perform, couldn't go out. So I think a lot of people have turned to Patreon during the pandemic. And technically I started it during the pandemic as well. But for me, like, I had already planned it. Like, I was kind of done with all my preparations somewhere in, ironically, February, which is when shit hit the fan. But I was ready to go. And then COVID happened. And I actually thought to myself, maybe I should not launch my Patreon right now, because isn't it weird to start asking people for money in a time where a lot of people will also have like financial challenges? So I hesitated for a long time whether I wouldn't wait until this thing blows over. And I'm glad that I didn't wait, because that would have been like another 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Because we know how that went. Yeah.
What was kind of an eye-opener to me was that a lot of people, when I launched it, were like, I'm so happy that I can support an artist that I like, even, you know, also through the pandemic. I heard people say, and this is like so fantastic to me, this is like a life goal. I heard people say, like, I have nothing to spend my concert budget on for this year. And I'm like, you have a concert budget? What am I doing with my life? Why don't I have a concert budget? You are like the coolest. So yeah, I learned that people have concert budgets.
People who aren't musicians, because musicians, we spend our disposable income on instruments and studio time. And yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's... people have been, I was really humbled by the amount of people that joined the Patreon right at the beginning. And a lot of people who joined back then are still there now. So that's really cool. But also, I knew, of course, a lot of people who were there, that they knew me from when I was with Delane. So obviously, when, you know, things started going south there, I was also concerned, like, I don't, maybe everyone will leave, you know, because they like me for this thing, and now will they still like me without it?
Yeah.
But people stuck around, and more than that, they really provided this kind of a safety net, because I really think, like, if I didn't have the Patreon at the moment that Delane disbanded, I think I would have fallen into some kind of black hole of, you know, like, there goes 16 sure. years of my life. What am I doing now? But the thing is, like, I had already committed to writing a song every month. I had a video shoot coming up for Victor back then that, you know, I needed to plan for. I had to arrange catering. Like, I had a lot of things like keeping me busy. And I had a lot of people cheering me on and kind of like raising my spirits on a Patreon as well. So on many levels, from like very practical, financial, emotional, it's definitely been a lifesaver. Yeah.
Does the community on Patreon help shape some of the things that you've been, do they contribute kind of to your creative direction or help you choose things or influence things at all?
I think when I started this, I started it mainly from the idea of I want a place for the songs that I do all alone, you know?
Yeah,
so
sure.
I didn't start out thinking like, oh, now I'm going to crowdsource lyrics, because I mainly wanted really that feeling of like, what will happen if I just, you know, carry out everything from A to Z. But in a way, I do think that they have influenced it. Well, this month, for example, like, I do these hangouts, and sometimes like I perform with my husband, who's not here now, but during the hangouts, he usually sits there, and we perform songs together, like acoustic versions of songs that I've been doing. And they've been saying like, with certain songs, like, oh, please record like an acoustic version of this. And this month I actually did that because, you know, yeah, because things turned out that way that I thought I have to do something different this month. So they do really inspire me. And I've also done this one challenge where like people could send me topics and I would pick one by rolling the dice to that one was for a Gear Gods thing actually. But like I involved them in that as well. And I like that more than I expected. So I might do that kind of things in the future now that I've had enough me time musically.
Right. You had your initial purge, but that is really cool. It's really interesting to see. I think I'm very fascinated by the relationships between communities and artists nowadays, because it's so much more of a direct relationship than in the past of music history, where I feel like there was less personal connection between the artists and the audience, you know?
Yeah.
You just introduced the live band for your upcoming shows. And I was curious about that. How does it feel to rehearse this material? It's quite different than some of the things you've done in the past. How's it coming together for live? Would you ever take this beyond just a few shows and do a tour?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I'm not sure, like, if I'd want to tour as much as I have been touring as the last couple of years. Like, maybe so, maybe no. I don't know. Like, I'm also really waiting for like this first live experience and seeing how that goes and how it feels and, you know, how the songs work live. It is definitely different to play these kind of songs. And 3 out of 4 people that I'm performing with were with me in the lane back then. So we're used to playing a certain type of songs together. And I noticed that because some of my songs on the Patreon, like some of the songs are that type of songs. And they go very, like, we play them twice and it's there, you know? It is very much like the more synthy, like the more poppy songs that actually require more work and more getting used to, because it's a bit out of our comfort zone. But yeah, that's actually kind of cool. And some cool things happened also because we were like, hey, you know, what can we do with this? It's a lot of work to also translate, you know, the things that I've been programming here as, you know, not necessarily a drummer, not necessarily a guitarist, and then translate that to actual people playing instruments. Yeah,
that's quite the challenge. That's going to be really cool.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask us, like, from a vocal perspective, obviously doing your own music, customizing it to your voice, having control over the creative process from start to finish, lyrically, vocally, do you feel like there's anything different about what you do now? And has your voice vocal approach changed? Are you exploring new territories in this new kind of era?
Not necessarily. Like, I've always been, especially in the vocal world, I've never felt like really limited or whatever, because I used to write those parts in Delane as well for the most of it. I didn't feel like I couldn't do what I want to do vocally there. What is the biggest difference is that when I was writing songs for Delane, I knew from the very start that I had to perform them live at one point. This is not the case for these songs. And there are some songs now where I feel like, okay, well, this is definitely like, this is challenging, but I don't know. I'm also enjoying the challenge. Like, I feel like vocally, or like, I feel like my entire career is just bluffing and saying that I can do something and then I have to do it. So then you get better because
you're put on the spot. Yeah.
Yeah. You're forced to practice until you can do it. So that's how I'm going to approach this as well.
That's really cool. So for these shows coming up, have you been doing anything to facilitate that vocally? Like, are you practice on your own a lot outside of the band?
I know that I should rehearse. I have been very scattered and all over the place for the last couple of months, and very busy with also, you know, doing a new song every month still, even while I'm doing also the preparations for this gig. And then there are some collaborations, like there's a lot going on. So I'm not practicing as much as I should. And I know that I should have some sort of routine to get my voice back in shape, because what I'm noticing now is, especially with like there is some choruses which are just full on belting choruses, super high and super loud. It's not like I cannot hit the notes. It's just that I feel that my overall level of fitness in order to, you know, keep it like super steady and keep the support that has diminished a little bit over the last 2 years.
How, if you're not able to play shows, you can't maintain that, you know? It's so tough. It was a rough couple years, you know? But it's cool, like, to have, I like when the universe kind of like forces you to pick it back up and get back out there on the stage. Yeah. You're going to film or stream these shows coming up? Or is it one? It's one show?
At this point, it's one show. I'm going to film it. I'm not going to stream it. And I'm going to be brutally honest. It's just too nerve-wracking for the first show ever to have it live streamed across the world. I'm like, I'll live stream this when, you know, we've done this a couple of times. And it's not the first time ever that we perform these songs. And I know that a lot of people are like, oh, it's a special occasion. We wish we could be there. And I do really feel for all of those people. And I know that the Netherlands is a small country and I don't expect everyone to come here. But it's also like, you know, one show has got to be the first. And the first is not going to be the one that I live stream.
I completely understand that, especially, you know, when everybody's getting used to each other. With a tour, you have a lot of time to get used to each other. You know, you get very tight from constantly playing every night. But one show is almost worse in a sense as like you don't have this repeated event that you're doing, you know, it's one and done. So it's really tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned collabs and I saw the other day a little bit of a teaser of something with Amelie Braun and Simone Simons. You guys obviously have something that you're working on. Maybe you can't talk about it yet.
I cannot. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. That's exciting. I'm sure people are going to be excited hearing about that. So that's three amazing vocalists. Something to look forward to regardless. Just the little teaser picture was really cool. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is you're obviously recording your own vocals a lot. This is a big thing because I'm starting to prefer this a lot. I also prefer editing and dealing with the tuning myself these days too. So do you prefer that? Or do you secretly like when other people record? Are there benefits to that, disadvantages to that?
I really like the fact that I'm alone when I try out vocal lines. I like that when I'm like, oh, this would be a cool line, I'm not sure if I can hit it, then no one's listening while I'm trying to hit it. That is something that I really like. Or when I've got like a little riff. Because the way that I work now is I think of it, I record it, and that's it. There's not really a demo phase. It's just, I just record it as I go. Mm. So oftentimes I will have like a riff in my mind. I will be like, can I sing this riff? And obviously a lot of the times, like the first time you sing it, it kind of sucks. And I like going through that part alone just because, you know, you don't have to worry about anyone. You don't have to be insecure or something. It could also help to just not fucking care about that.
That's impossible. I always tell everybody, like, I don't know very many vocalists who don't care about that. You know, it's just very, it's just kind of the nature of being a vocalist and a musician. You're constantly like analyzing your own.
Exactly. Analyzing, overanalyzing. So I like that. And I think I've done more exciting things or like more wild things vocally since I've been recording by myself. And then, you know, with the backing vocals, I have a different treatment with the backing vocals than I have for the lead vocals. So I am very particular about how I like my own vocals to sound. So by now, I actually think that I can do that better than someone else.
Yes.
It's also nice to be able to split the work. So maybe in the future, I will record with someone. It's also sometimes good to have an extra set of ears or someone to hype you up, you know? That can be good because I don't hype myself up. I hype myself down.
Which is typical of most singers, honestly. To be honest, we're very hard on ourselves. I think singers are the most, vocalists are by far, and I say this like being a teacher, you know, like they're by far the most self-critical, being one myself, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, you cannot blame it on your instrument because you are your instrument. Like,
yes. Yeah, you can't be like, oh, this, I need to go get my voice set up at the shop. I wish I could do that, but, you know, you can't. Sometimes I wish, you know, I could exchange the tuning as well. Just having an extremely low voice. But I think if people get good at it, it is more practical to do it yourself. We're all at home. And also, as well, I feel like with tuning, whenever, even if I have like a really good person do the tuning for me, oftentimes it comes back back, like with some wrong notes and things. They actually don't know how your melody goes, you know? And so if the computer decides it should be this note, they might not realize that's not actually the note you were trying to sing anyway. You know, sometimes it can come back like computerized wrong, and you know how the song goes. You wrote the song, you know?
Yeah, that's also kind of a reality check, because then it's like, wait, was my note closer to the other note?
Yep. And right. Exactly. I wanted to ask, have you ever done any aggressive vocals, harsh vocals? Would you ever explore that area with your voice? Or is that just like not something you're interested in at all?
No, I have done it like on a few occasions. Like that's actually one of the things that also in my set now, there's one song. It's like only like six times the same word, but it's like there are some harsh vocals in there. I've also done some grunts on the Lane albums, but it was always like just, you know, a word here and there. If it was like bigger parts, then we'd ask someone else to do it. Otto is good at it. George has done a lot of our harsh vocals. Elisa has been a guest as well. But the thing for me is that I really like doing it. I like how it sounds. I'm just not good enough at it yet that I can do it without a risk. I should have taken these 2 years of not performing to practice that a lot, but then I always had to record the song of the month as well. So there's never a time where I'm like, I can practice this and I don't have to worry about how my voice sounds the next day, because obviously the thing is that if I practice and if I do it like right 9 out of 10 times, it can still kind of hurt my throat if you do it wrong the one time, you know?
Oh, sure. Certainly.
Yeah. So practicing harsh vocals has just always been a challenge for me, because I always have something that I have to sing that evening or the next day, and I'm always worried like, if I overblow my voice now, like, will I be able to sing that?
You've been incredibly productive. You know, you've been doing so much stuff. I mean, there's only so many things you can practice at once. You know, you've been so productive, you know.
And it kind of sucks because I always feel like I can only be good at one thing at a time. You know, there's a lot of things that I feel like, oh, you know, if I only practice this like 5 minutes a day, or if I only... You know, there's only so much you can do.
That's the reality. You can't be, you know, that phrase, a jack of all trades is a master of none, kind of. The reality is you can really be focused on one particular field, one particular subject, one particular instrument as your primary focus. And to be really, really good at it, other things have to take a back seat. You literally can't do everything, you know.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to ask you about some of the, to kind of divert a little bit, it's a little bit of a diversion to the some of the visual components of the things you've been doing.
Yeah.
For example, I think that your video for Off Kickin' is incredibly stunning. It's a really gorgeous visual masterpiece, art kind of form in and of itself, you know, on top of the song being a separate art form. The video tells a whole story, but it's very beautifully done, beautifully edited. Tell me about what you've been doing when you're working on those visual components like that and how that plays into your songs.
I think I was already envisioning the video for this one when I was writing the song, because the protagonist of the song is a woman who is in this institution locked up because she has killed someone that she loves. And what she says in the lyrics is like, I did nothing wrong and I would do it again. And it was for the better. And when you hear that, you think, oh, that's because this person is crazy, you know, that like, but what I wanted to do is create a backstory where it is, in fact, a mercy kill, and where that was, in fact, better than the alternative. And I love horror movies. I think that, for example, like the Suspiria influences are very visible in the styling choices as well. I love folk horror. I like monster movies. So I love choreography. So I wanted to just incorporate a lot of those things into this video. And I worked with a video ink company we worked with before, back when I was with Delane, and came up with this crazy wild backstory. And it, you know, it had all of the things that I love, like including like that mercy kill, which was from the start, like the most important factor for me. Like I wanted the video to explain that, no, this person is in fact not crazy, but she did do this to save her beloved. So
that is really cool. That's a really awesome twist. I was going to ask, vocally, the bulk of the material you've released over the years in any form has been singing in English.
Yeah.
So, and I'm assuming Dutch is your first language. And what was it like to compose in Dutch? Was there anything about the storytelling that influenced what language you chose to compose it in?
I had this little bass loop that I liked so much, and I just started singing over it, and I started singing in Dutch. And that's the whole thing about this Patreon, where I do a song every month, and I didn't intend it to be like an album at first. It's like I can just decide every month, like, what's it going to be? Like, what kind of song is this going to be? So I'm not necessarily limited by, oh, you know, it has to fit like a certain genre. It has to fit like a certain vibe or theme that I'm going with. It doesn't even have to fit the language. So when I had these first lines and they were Dutch, and I thought, yeah, can I do this? I've never done Dutch before. And then I was like, yeah, why shouldn't I? It kind of slaps, you know?
It's great. Sounds great.
Yeah, so I just went for it. I do notice that it's harder for people to connect to what the song is about, which in a way is nice for me too, because sometimes I feel like I put a lot of effort in the lyrics, and sometimes I feel like, you know, how many people actually take notice of what you're saying and how you're saying it, and how many people pick up on the stories. Even if this one, even with the people who are kind of not that connected to it because it was in another language, I was like, oh, so that actually confirmed to me that, you know, they do listen when, you know, it's...
They do, Meg, they care. And you actually did the rare thing where your video tells part of the story that you laid out in the lyrics, because a lot of music videos surprise me that they don't go with the story that they put in the lyrics. That always has surprised me since like the 90s, you know, so that helps a lot too. You can at least kind of tell like a storyline, you know, from the video.
Yeah, and this is also that was also like a conscious choice, and it's also nice to, because that just sounded like, oh my god, no one's listening. But you know, from like the diehards, that, you know, the first thing people did was like asking, like, can we have the translated lyrics? So you know that there is the group of people that will always really dig into it. But for like the casual listener, I never knew, and yeah, it's kind of nice to know that they too do.
Yeah, so cool.
But yeah, this video production, it was definitely like the most intense, the biggest production that I've done so far. And it was also very intense. Like, I cannot dance for the life of me. Like, getting that choreography in, it was really like...
Yes, those group scenes in the video. Mm-hmm. But you did it. I don't think I would have known that. It looks like you knew exactly what you're doing there. So it paid off.
I mean, I did practice a lot. By the end of it, like, my husband knew the moves because I'd been, you know, doing it in the living room. So yeah, but that was really cool, and I really loved doing it as well. Like, it was really cool.
You had hair for half of the video shoot, and then you shaved it for the other half, right?
Yeah, I killed my friend with the scissors.
Mm-hmm.
So then, before I was sacrificed instead of her. If you haven't seen the video, this sounds so weird. Actually, if you've seen the video.
I've definitely seen it. But yeah, the people listening might be like, well, they're going to check it out if they haven't seen it listening to this.
They should. You know? They should.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's I kill my friend with the scissors. Then my hair gets cut off as some sort of punishment. But I'm also being sacrificed instead of her. So it was basically like, I'd always been kind of curious about shaving off my hair, but never had a good reason to, because it's very scary, especially since, you know, a lot of people cut their hair short first and then they shave it. But my hair was very long.
It was very long. It was very long.
Yeah. And I had extensions too. Like, it was like super exaggerated. And we were talking about, how can we make me look as miserable as possible, like at the end scene where I'm at the clearing, ready to be, you know, punished, sacrificed to these monster gods. And I was like, we just shave off all my hair. And people didn't think I was serious.
Wow.
But I was.
But, you know, I think like what I was thinking was like, oh, what killer art, though, when I watched the video, like that you went for it. You went in and you did the actual art. You didn't wear wigs, like you did it.
I did hesitate until 2 days before the shoot. And then I was like, I'm doing it. And it, like you said, it was like, let's do it for art.
Well, it looks sick. It's like one of the best looking videos I've seen in a really long time. It's really cool. It's really sick. It's a really awesome concept. And I think that's part of it, because it's like, you know, she actually did that. Like it's real, you know. You know it's real, because, you know.
Yeah, put a lot of sweat and tears and hair in that one. Yeah.
That's so cool. I absolutely love it. I feel like it's really expressive and it's really cool to see you do something like that. It was just wonderful. That's wonderful. So another question, I want to go back now to like vocal technique stuff, because sometimes we get kind of technical on this podcast, and you have this really, well, you have a lot of different vocal tones that you can pull out of your voice, because we can hear that in all the different layerings, some of the really high, more operatic things you do versus the belty things. But through it all, especially in your belting tone, you have this really recognizable, crystal clear, resonant vocal tone. And I was just curious if you ever, you know, actively worked on that, if tones are something that you spend a lot of time exploring, if you've ever studied any particular technique that helped with the tone.
I started out doing light music. It was called jazz, but it was everything that was not classical music when I was 13. I'd been playing the clarinet. Oh, there it is behind me, which I just picked up like a year ago, because I was like, I played this instrument as a kid. It's a shame that I'm not doing anything with it. But when I was 13, I wanted to switch from the clarinet to singing lessons, because I really like to sing. And I started with light music, but at that time, I only wanted to sing like Kate Bush songs and like everything that was like really high and shrill. And I loved kind of but that was all like very much like falsetto, or like the sharper, even edging more towards like the classical round tones. I really loved doing that when I was like around that age. And my teacher back then, she said, I think you should go to like a classical teacher. I think they'd be able to help you develop that part of your voice more. Back then I was actually like, I was classified as like a soprano. And I know that the way that I sing now, I don't really sound like a soprano. I also don't think, I'm not sure if I am a soprano, but anyway, I was singing soprano pieces and I really liked that. I really enjoyed that. But still, I haven't done that kind of training for a very long time, because my instructor back then, my vocal instructor, she didn't really like heavy music.
Yep.
So I felt at that point there were other parts of my voice that I wanted to, that I started to want to explore too. And I couldn't really do that there. So at that point I quit. And then I had a long time of no training at all, where I was just whatever I kind of learned was basically either songwriting or in a studio, where I was like, can I do this? And I did it.
Yeah.
Then there was one tour where I lost my voice, and not lost my voice like, oh my God, I can't hit this note. Like I woke up one morning and I couldn't speak. I couldn't even whisper. Like there was nothing there. And that got me so terrified. And I didn't know what I had done wrong, because, you know, I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. It's like, I didn't know what it was. So that was when I thought I have to get vocal training. And another thing is, it might have been like, actually a few days after that, there was like an air vent going straight into my bunk. And I found out that was like probably blowing in my face the entire time when I was asleep. But I just got, I got nervous at that point, where I was like, my voice is doing something and I am not in control of it. And that got me quite scared. So that's when I started to do a little bit of training again. I did like a course in Estill voice techniques, which is great because they kind of force you to do all of the vocal styles, which was like the opposite of what I have with my classical training, where it's like, here's this one thing that we like, we're going to make you very good at it. And this one was more like, these are all the things that you can do with your voice. And look at this They also had us hooked to these things that show you like exactly like the frequencies where your voice is stronger and where it's most prominent. So I really liked that. I also liked that it was kind of more, you know, there in my earlier vocal training, there was a lot of when you sing this part, pretend to be smelling a rose or pretend that there is a letter in the queen's pantyhose. You know, it was like, I don't know how I would respond to that. It's like, it was so very abstract to me. And what I really liked about a still was that it's just very factual. And it's like, look, here is a thing of your throat. We shove the camera down someone's throat. This is what your throat is doing when you're doing that. This is what your throat's doing when you're doing that. And it was like, wow, this is actually so very helpful. Or, wow, I can see how doing that might hurt your voice. Or so this I really liked. And I haven't had like training where I went like every week or once every like not really like that. But now whenever I do feel like, oh, I need to get some training or I need to get, you know, some help with this or that. Whenever I search for something, search for someone to help, I always go for like someone who does a still, because I really like the approach and I really like that it's not attached to a certain type of style.
It still is wonderful. I love that. I love their approach, and I like a lot and use a lot of their some of their concepts. You know, I think that's why it's really cool to explore all the different. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to approach vocals, and when you find that one program or that kind of just that one approach that clicks with you, makes it a lot easier for you to explore, like you said, all the tones. Classical is very limiting. It's one thing and one thing only, but that's not really how a modern musician functions, I don't think.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure that if you would have someone who's like totally into, like deep into classical music, that the classical is one thing, maybe sounding the same to them as, you know, someone who would tell us like, oh, you know, metal is just one thing. But from a vocal perspective, at that point, it did really feel like that. Like, oh, I'm just getting the one thing here. I've been curious about CVT because they have you done CVT?
I've studied a lot of it. I haven't been to one of their seminars or anything, but I have studied a lot of their materials. And I really do also like several of their concepts and a lot of their research answers a lot of questions about clean vocals. Where I think there's a little bit better research is where they get into the distorted vocals. I think for distorted vocals, there might be a little bit more in depth. I think they just barely scratched the surface, but for clean vocals, modern belting, I think they nailed a lot of stuff in their research, very much so. I've learned a lot from them. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, as we're wrapping it up here, what's next for you? So are you going to continue this one song a month? Did I read that you've actually been doing it for 28 months of songs? Or
yeah, the next one's going to be number 30.
That's phenomenal. Is this going to, how long are you going to keep this pace up? Are you just going to keep doing it?
I don't know. I do notice now that it's becoming harder to do. I'm also becoming more frustrated with, like in the beginning, I was like, because I contrasted this way of working against the way that traditionally, historically, I worked was like you have an idea. Then you go into a songwriting room and you look at that idea together with people. And then you make that into a demo. And then, you know, everyone takes it to their separate islands. And then it turns into a pre-production. And then you go record it and then you see if it's good enough and then maybe you re-record it and then maybe it still needs additional things and then at one point, you know, you get to mixing and master it and you wrap it up and then it takes months to get released if you're lucky.
Yeah.
And I was frustrated with the fact that, you know, you have a spark of inspiration and then 1.5 years later the song is released and you forget what was that about?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's about something happening in the world and you want to respond to it. But, you know, you cannot do that if it takes 1.5 years. So what I really wanted to do is do something that's quick and snappy as a contrast to that. Now I've done that for 30 months. And now I'm kind of looking for a contrast to the quicker snapping. Now I want to take my time again for some things. I am thinking about like ways to do it and ways to move forward. I do still, I like the fact that I force myself to put something new out there every month. But what I'm thinking now is like, if I want to give the songs more time to breathe, maybe I can do something where I do put the song out, but it's not necessarily finished.
Ah, oh, interesting.
So, and then I'm also not sure if I will still share the snippets outside of the Patreon yet, but I haven't completely worked this out yet. But I thought a way of me to both have, I want to give people new music every month. And I want to, because, you know, that's what I told them I do. And also I want to keep the pace up for myself because, you know, I can get into this kind of debilitating kind of perfectionism.
Sure.
So then I can have that. But then on the other hand, I can also give it the time to breathe and say, you know, here is the first version of the song. And then, you know, then I can let it breathe and I can think about, oh, how do I like it? What can I change? And then maybe at one point I will make an album where I still maybe completely rewrite it or re-record parts of rearrange parts or so I'm thinking of maybe going towards that route where there is still new music, but it is not necessarily because it's pressure to say that a song is finished.
Yes.
And sometimes you will have a song where I feel like this could potentially be a great song, but it has to be finished tomorrow. So it's going to be an okay song, you know?
Sure. Yeah. That it's always a battle between timelines and creativity. Sometimes it's like, if we don't put a deadline, we'll never get anything done and we'll overthink it to death. But then on the other hand, there are times... It's, you know, it's this constant battle because it's like, well, sometimes you finish it and you're like, I really wish I would have had a lot more time to work on that.
Yeah. And at this point, like, if you have to do like a new song every month and also, you know, do other things in that month and also have it mixed and mastered in that month and make like a cover art for it in the same month, there's no time to overthink anything. Or, you know, song wise, like I can still overthink everything and I do still overthink everything. But.
Would you be doing your job as a singer if you weren't? No, it's our job to overthink.
Definitely. So, yeah, I do still think I'll keep, because that was a long answer to your question, but I do think that I will keep putting out new things every month. I just don't know if I will take the exact same approach to it as I've been doing for the last 30 months.
30 months is a record. I have a good friend of mine who was also on the podcast, this guy, Daniel Graves. He's like an industrial vocalist.
Okay.
And he was doing one, he did it for 12 months. And like, that was enough for him. That 30 months is very impressive. So
I'm also very tired. So.
Well, we all need a break to recharge. We're only human. And I think one thing about that sucks that I'm kind of maddened by in the, like, I love a lot of things about being a musician in the 21st century and I hate a lot of them. And one of the things that I have a love-hate relationship with is the constant, like, content, put it out, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And especially now that the interwebs are so critical of what content is worthy
yes.
for people to see and what isn't. Like, I feel like I've had a shadow ban on Instagram for a while, but it's very annoying. I agree. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me today because this is a really lovely interview and it was really great to hear about all of the cool things you've been exploring in this current era of your music. So thank you for sharing with us all of that today. And thank you so much for being on the podcast. Where should people follow you if they want to continue to follow your work?
Well, they can go to the Patreon, which is patreon.com/CharlotteVessels. Or just charlottevessels.nl will get you to all of the things,
all of the YouTube, the cool.
and the Instagrams and the socials and the Spotifys and everything.
Well, thank you, Charlotte. It's been lovely having you. Thank you so much.
It's been lovely hanging with you again. Thank you.
That wraps up this episode of the Voice Hacks podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show.